In about the year 962 BC, nearly 3,000 years ago, King David, the great king of Israel, died. And the scripture records that when he died, his young son Solomon took his place. Solomon was quite young. He was inexperienced. He was taking on a daunting new responsibility. And so God asked him, he said, "Ask me for some gift. What is it that you would have as you begin your long reign?" And Solomon asked, as we, I think most of us know, for the gift of wisdom. He asked God that he would in particular give him wisdom of two kinds. One, the kind of wisdom to see what God would have him do and the will to carry it out like he did for his father David. And second, the wisdom to make good decisions based on justice for the kingdom, discernment, insight. And it says in the scriptures that God was just thrilled. He was delighted, it says, that Solomon hadn't asked for certain other things. Solomon didn't ask, for example, for riches, and it says God was pleased. Solomon didn't ask for a long life. It says that God was pleased. He didn't ask for a victory over his enemies. It says God was pleased. And because God was pleased, he gave Solomon very richly what he had asked for and more besides. And Solomon, of course, from that day to this, is known for his great wisdom. Well, you and I very often pray for wisdom too, don't we? How often have you been in a tough situation and really wished that you could see your way through it, to know the right thing to do? For example, sometimes there's a strain in the family, isn't there? You ever have a difficult patch with a parent in your past, maybe present? A difficult time with a child, with a spouse, where it's not just that, you know, bad things are happening, but you really are confused. You don't know exactly what it is you should be doing. What about on the job? Difficulties arise there, or maybe like Solomon, you've taken on a new responsibility somewhere. Difficulties can come about with neighbors. There can be some frictions there. Difficulties can come about with good friends even, and sometimes great relationships can go sour for a while, and you wonder, what should I do to try to patch this up? Sometimes there are even difficulties in the church. You know, people who are in churches long enough know that. And so what we really want, and I think we all want very desperately when we're in trouble, is we want to know what we should do. We want the wisdom, the guidance to know how to handle that properly. Well, the good news is, according to James in the New Testament, if you pray for it, God will give it to you. This is a prayer request that is guaranteed to be granted. I want to call your attention to the bulletin insert. Probably each of you have seen that in your bulletins. Okay. This bulletin insert has not only my text that I'm going to read with you in a moment, but it also has all the other Bible passages and the longer quotations that I will be using today. So you want to keep it handy with you so as we go along you can read with me when we get to those things. Our text this morning is James 1, 5-8. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all, without finding fault, and it will be given to him. But when he asks, he must believe and not doubt, because he who doubts is like a wave of the sea, blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all he does. Well, our text begins with that wonderful promise. You want wisdom? Ask. God is eager to give it to you. He'll give it to you freely and not even find fault. But sure enough, right away there's some ifs, aren't there? There's some qualifications. What's all this stuff about how the asker has to ask while believing and not doubting? What's all this stuff about being double-minded and about being unstable? Well, that's what I want to talk about today. I want us to understand the promise, and I want to understand the ifs that go along with it. Well, let's start with a question. When we ask God for wisdom, exactly what are we asking for, according to the way James is using the word here? I think to some extent English dictionaries are helpful. The word wisdom was chosen by translators because it pretty well captures the meaning of the original languages here. On your bulletin insert, I quote from two of the leading dictionaries. The American Heritage Dictionary says, "Wisdom is understanding what is true, right, or lasting. Sagacity, good judgment." And excerpting from Webster's Unabridged New International, it says, "Ability to judge soundly and deal sagaciously with facts, especially as they relate to life and conduct, knowledge with the capacity to make good use of it, perception of the best ends and the best means for accomplishing it." Well, if we boil all this down, what do we get from the English dictionaries? Wisdom is good judgment, right? Good judgment and a knowledge of the facts that are needed to apply the good judgment. That's what it's all about. Now, of course, what's really decisive always is what was meant in the Bible, and it's pretty close to that. If we were to ask what the Bible means by wisdom, a good place to start would be with a really long section of the Old Testament about wisdom. You'd find the books of Job, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes are almost exclusively concerned with wisdom and its opposite, foolishness. How to get the one, how to avoid the other. If we look at what wisdom is there, we see that wisdom is above all in those books about the sense of priorities, to know which things are more important, which things are less important, about the self-control to govern ourselves so that we make good judgments and have good conduct in terms of it. Wisdom, we find, is intensely practical. Wisdom doesn't have a single thing to do with your IQ. You could have an off-the-chart IQ and you could be foolish, the way those books talk about it. In fact, a lot of very wise people, or very smart people with high IQs, are foolish. You could be a person who at the other end is average or below. You might struggle along, but you could be very wise because you might have this insight into the consequences of things, seeing which things are more important, which things are less important, and the self-governance to be able to carry that off. So wisdom doesn't have to do with knowing a lot of facts. You could be a walking encyclopedia and be a fool as far as those books are concerned. It's about the practical knowledge and the good judgment to put it into use in guiding your life. In the book of Proverbs in particular, if you go through and were to list the things associated with wisdom the most, the two that pop out the most, knowledge is only part of the picture. Okay. The two that pop out the most are humility, we'll come back to that, humility, and self-control. And any definition of wisdom in the Bible had better bring both of those in. Well, why humility? You know, if you're a cocky know-it-all, thinks you've already got all the answers, and you just go leaping out there and you don't take good advice from anyone when it's offered, okay, you'll probably get about what you deserve. And it happens all the time, doesn't it? Wise people have to be humble enough to know they need help. Wise people have to not think they're just born having cornered all the market on truth. They go to friends. They go to people who've been there. They not only hear good advice, they take it. It's said over and over, that kind of humility. Self-control. Well, if in only in a book-learning sense you had all this knowledge of high priorities and what counted, and you could pass every test on it, but in your own life you make a train wreck out of it, is that wise? Wisdom has to do with follow-through at the level of living. And you're not wise if you don't have the self-control to put that into practice. So Proverbs takes wisdom out of the realm of just something in your mind and it puts it into the whole person. It has to do with your conduct and your attitudes as well as with your knowledge. According to these same books, foolishness, of course, would be the opposite, wouldn't it? How is foolishness characterized there? Well, one thing that comes up a lot is impatience. You're in a hurry. You're not going to take the time to go deep. You're not going to go look for more information. You want a quickie right now. You want a little soundbite, and on you go with life. Well, that's one of the marks of the fool, over and over again in these books. Superficiality. You just stay on the surface. You don't like to go deep. You don't like to drill down and find out where things are coming from. Just give me again that quickie, that Band-Aid fix, and I'll get on with life. It says over and over again that the key mark of the fool is unwillingness to take good advice. Okay. And you know, when we're young, there's an impatience about it. You got all those old people telling you what to do, and you think, ah, I have my own insight. I see this sort of thing. You know, I thought when I was a late teenager that the whole world had been kind of a bunch of silliness until I came along and saw everything really clearly. Were you there, too, as a late teenager? You know, Mark Twain makes jokes about that sometimes in his writings, about how his father was just the biggest idiot he'd ever known when he was a kid. And then by the time he got in his middle 20s, it was amazing how much the old man had learned, you know. Well, it's that way, isn't it, with all of us? You know, Mother Nature's having fun. She's getting us out of the nest. But we all of us tend to exaggerate how much we already know, and we need the humility to seek advice and to take it. And the key mark of the fool in the book of Proverbs, you can go through and take a thesaurus and write it down, is unwillingness to take advice, unwillingness to seek it, and unwillingness to follow it. So a bloatedly overconfident certainty that we already know is the biggest enemy to wisdom and to seeking it. And that's why overall these books say the advice you should seek above all, as Carolyn had in the children's message, is found in the Bible. It's found in God's word and in God's law and in meditating on it. Advice from other people, but above all, from God. Well, let's boil that down. If in a Bible sense you pray for wisdom, you should be praying for a union of three things. One, yes, some knowledge. You should know the things available to you that you might do, and you should know what they lead to, their consequences. You should know on a scale of priority which ones are more important, which ones are least important. You should, too, have self-control. You don't just pass a pop quiz on that. You do something about it. You put it into practice in your life. And third, you have humility. You don't think you already know it all. You go to the good book. You go to friends. You take good advice. James pretty clearly in our text is thinking of wisdom that way. You know, we started in our text in verse 3. And if we had been starting a couple of verses before in the book of James, he's just saying that we ought to be really thrilled when God puts us in rough situations. Doesn't that sound like a paradox? Rejoice when you're just thronged about with trials and difficulties in your life. Well, that's not how I normally feel about it, okay? And James says why? He says, because if you steer through them the right way, you'll come through it a much better and stronger Christian. It's an opportunity to grow. That's what he said. Well, doesn't that raise a natural question? Well, that's great, you know, but what is this right way and how will I know it? That's why this arises where it does in his book. How will you know the right way? Well, pray for it, for heaven's sake, and God will show you. Now, this James's promise that we'll receive this gift of wisdom had some ifs, remember? It had some other things that are said, and in fact, three other things are said right away after it. And so I would like to turn to them. The first thing that James had to say after it is he wants us to remember how God gives gifts. Okay. Think how it is with God. He just loves to give good things to his people. You don't have to badger him. You don't have to find some magic formula to get it out of him. He wants to give it, and he doesn't find fault. I remember when I was young and often had to go for help to other people, how happy they were to say, I told you so. You ever run into that when you try to get help from people? Some people are willing to help you, but they're full of the I told you so's. James has just said, God doesn't have any I told you so's. He's not finding fault. He wants to give you the good gifts that you're after. It's often said of the book of James that it reads like a commentary on the Sermon on the Mount. And right here we think of famous words that again are in your insert from Matthew 7, the Sermon on the Mount. Ask and it will be given to you, seek and you will find, knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks the door will be opened. Which of you, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? In asking for wisdom, we're asking for a good gift. God is eager to give that to us. But the next thing James says is, but you better be careful in asking, that you believe and don't doubt. Those are the words that we have here, believe and don't doubt. That phrase, believe or ask in faith, as we have in some versions, is one of the more misunderstood phrases that you run into in the New Testament. Often Jesus will say that you should ask in faith or ask believing without doubting. And I think a lot of people read it this way. Scrunch up that old inner believing mechanism really hard. Believe, believe, believe. Don't let any doubt seep in. Keep the window closed. And if you just believe hard enough, you know, just wish like in an old Disney film, really, really hard, okay? Well, what's going to happen? You get it, right? And I think that often people read it as you just want anything at all. You believe that hard and don't let doubt seep in, and there it will come. That isn't what it means. That isn't what it means here, and it's not what it means anywhere else. James goes on two chapters later to clarify. He says in chapter 4, verse 3, when you ask, you do not receive. Notice that. People are asking, and what? They don't receive. This is in the Bible. When you ask, you do not receive, because you ask with the wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. It looks like whether we get what we ask for depends on what we're asking for and why, doesn't it? Motives. And if it's just about pleasures, forget it. God doesn't give that. Well, asking in faith, what does it mean? I think what it means is consistently with your faith. You know, the faith in the Bible usually is a word that stands for the whole of Christianity. Ask for God for things that fit into that picture. Ask God for the strength to be the kind of person he wants you to be. Ask for the things that are in line with Christian principles. God will give them. He's eager to give them, the good things. But if what we're asking for is something else, well, that's a different matter. We need to be asking then for the steadfastness, for the trust, for the belief that go with faith. And you know, in the New Testament, faith does mean all three. It's not just belief. That's not what the word is. It also includes the ability to trust God. We still use it that way. If I tell you I have faith in Joanne, would you be surprised to learn that all I meant was I thought she existed? That's not what I mean, is it? No, I mean I trust her, right? Through thick and thin, I rely on her. That's part of the meaning of faith. And faith in the New Testament is also not just belief, it's also something kept. What is keeping faith? Doesn't that mean being there tried and true, come what may, through thick and thin for somebody? You keep faith by being relied on. And if you use the word faith in a Bible sense, sure, you believe things about Jesus and God and what they've done for you. You trust Jesus and God. You don't have ifs and qualms about it. And you also steadfastly adhere to this. You keep faith with them. Have all three. That is what it is to ask in faith. Well, James then says something about doubt and double-mindedness. See that at the very end of our text? What is this doubt and double-mindedness? He said, he who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That man should not think he will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man, unstable in all he does. I looked in some big Greek dictionaries about that original word that we translate as double-minded. And the ones that are really big and have long articles, I excerpted from one of them this. The word double-minded, the picture you should have in your mind, and I quote, is like a drunk staggering from side to side. You know, my neighborhood, I live on what they call the bar route, okay? And people are walking home from bars. I'm glad they're not driving. They're walking home from bars to go to various places on the other end of town. We've even had drunks end up sleeping in our yard and things like that through the years. Well, I've seen how they walk, have you? Bang, bang, all over the place, you know. That's one reason I suppose the police ask them to walk a straight line. Drunks can't do that. Okay. That dictionary went on to say, picture it like a cork bobbing every which way on the waves in the wind. Okay. See, just hear there yawn. Okay. And when James uses the word double-minded, and he does later in the same book, he means by it people who have divided or mixed loyalties. Okay. You know, on the one hand, you want God. You really do. You want to please God. You want all the good things that go with it. But at the same time, you've got a heavy worldly agenda. You're wanting success and popularity and this and that and the other. And you've got a big program of worldly things that you want to pull off too. And you got the two all jumbled up. That's double-mindedness. Double-mindedness is divided loyalties. James goes on in a later chapter to say of it that it is adultery. You know, you've made your promises and plighted your faith to one person and you go chasing someone else. You want to love God, but you also want to love the world. Read with me what he says in chapter 4, 4 to 8. You adulterous people, there's the word. Don't you know that friendship with the world is hatred toward God? Anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Or do you think the Scripture says without reason that the Spirit he caused to live in us envies intensely? But he gives us more grace. That is why the Scripture says, God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come near to God, and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. There's that word again. Friendship with the world, friendship with God, you can't mix them together and have a smooth mix. Let's put it another way. When some people ask God for wisdom, they're not really asking God for the strength of character and the insight to be better Christians. What they're asking is for, say, a way to have sort of a cornering of the market, success in business, in some sort of a worldly kind of a thing, isn't it? They want God to give them the insight to succeed in this worldly projects. They want pleasures. They want possessions. They want victories. They want that list of things that God was so pleased that Solomon didn't ask for, right? The victories, the long life, the pleasures, the wealth. The wisdom that God grants when we ask for him, that is guaranteed to grant, isn't for that. The wisdom God offers to give us, promises to give us, is for the insight to become better people, to be the kind of people he wants us to be, to meet the trials and the hardships that life brings us. And boy, doesn't it? They're all over the place, Christians and non-Christians alike. It's the ability to see through this sort of thing and to know what it is that will steer us through so that we will be stronger and more mature Christians. That's what's being promised here. And it has a lot to do with attitudes, a lot to do with our motives. And I think James in chapter 3, we should add this to it too. He says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show it by his good life, by deeds done, in the humility that comes from wisdom. But if you harbor bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast about it or deny the truth. Such wisdom does not come from heaven, but is earthly, unspiritual, of the devil. For where you have envy and selfish ambition, there you find disorder and every evil practice. But the wisdom that comes from heaven, now this is the kind we get by praying for it. The wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. Peacemakers who sow in peace raise a harvest of righteousness. I love what Matthew Henry said in his beloved commentary about those words. He said, true wisdom may be known by meekness, humility. It is a great instance of wisdom prudently to bridle our own anger and patiently to bear the anger of others. When we are mild and calm, we are best able to hear reason and best able to speak it. Wisdom produces meekness, and meekness increases wisdom. Well, so what should we carry away from today's sermon? These things, I think. The kind of wisdom that the Bible promises when we ask for it fuses three things. Knowledge, yes, a certain amount, not a lot of book learning really, but priorities, consequences, that kind of thing. Fused with self-control, you're able to govern yourself to put it into practice. together with an awful lot of humility. Humility to seek advice, humility to follow God and His law. I think second, when we need that wisdom, wanting to really know what we should do, we're invited then to take that difficulty to God in prayer and say, Lord, show me the way through this. And you know what? He'll give it. He'll give it provided we're trying to find the way through this kind of problem that will make us grow as Christians. He's eager to do it. He won't find fault and say, I told you so. Now, he may not do it with you sitting in the nest like a baby bird with an open beak waiting on worms. Okay. He may choose to do it by Bible study, right? He may choose to do it by a conversation with friends. God very often is answering prayers by getting us to get up and get on our feet and roll up our sleeves and go do something about it. And maybe that's how he wants to answer that prayer. Do it. Okay. That, too, is good advice. Okay. But you know, if what you're really after is a counterfeit wisdom, what you really want to do is to be successful in the world, and church is just sort of something else you do. It's just mixed in there somehow with it. Forget it. Your prayers for wisdom are not going to be answered. God doesn't promise to give you career cleverness. He doesn't promise to give you a bigger bank account. Those are not important to God. In fact, the reverse is. He wants you to depend on Him. In fact, I would say one thing about it is if we have that, we don't just say, oh, well, I can perk along this way. You can't. Friendship with God is enmity. Friendship with the world is enmity to God. It's adultery. Okay. And if we have that kind of mixed agenda, repent. Change your ways. Come back to God. He gives grace. And you know what? That's another prayer He promises always to answer. That prayer for grace, if we really come with a broken heart to Him. I want to conclude with some words from Solomon. We began with Solomon. In the book of Proverbs, chapter 2. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as silver and search for it as hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from His mouth come knowledge and understanding.
You've been listening to Dr. Steve Trammell at Hayes Christian Church. Hayes Christian Church is a non-denominational fellowship in Hayes, Kansas. We are supported by the generosity of our members, attenders, and friends. The financial support we raise goes to projects which further spread the gospel to those who do not yet know Jesus, to local, national, and international missions, and they help to keep these podcasts free. If you'd like to share a monetary gift with us, please visit our webpage at hayeschristianchurch.org and click on the Donate button. Or you may mail your gift to P.O. Box 1111, Hayes, Kansas 67601. If you have questions, comments, or would like more information, we would love to hear from you. Simply go to our webpage and click on the Contact Us form. Thank you for your generosity, and may God bless you as you seek to follow Him.